Hello and welcome back to the Soapbox. We have both been, I'm going to say, exceedingly busy the last little bit, but we have found a moment to sit down and to record together. And how has your week been, Dad?
Yes, as you mentioned, pretty busy. I spent end of year for schools is just high energy with all the end of year chapels and presentation days and report writing for teachers and yes, all the end of year things need to happen. It just keeps you going flat out. So yes, very, very busy. Not much time to even read or do too much, just keeping the show running for the school end.
Moment to moment.
Yes, another week and we'll be out of there and the kids will be finished and we'll be on summer holidays and I'll be transitioning into a new role, which will be awesome. Family and Children's Ministries in the Greater Sydney Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
And that's going to be exciting for you as well to transition across the road from where you've been and to get back into that space, which you haven't even left, to be honest. You've still been doing all the stuff there, but... No, that's going to be really, really exciting for you.
Yes, I'm looking forward to getting some time to hopefully write some resources. There's still a few I haven't written yet. So, yes, looking forward to some more time to do that.
Resource writing is always important. I get that. I get the busy season. This season for me as well is intense. There's lots of end-of-year stuff. I go on leave at the end of next week. Well, really, it actually starts the Monday after. So the list of to-dos before I leave is quite high. So hopefully I can get through them all. We have our carols program next Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's a full day. But we are excited. I'm busy this week doing a online families week of worship, trying to teach families how to do family worship at home and make it a habit and make a bit of a culture change there, because as we've spoken about before, getting a God moment is really important. So, yeah, modelling that at the moment, but that means I am busy making sure that the resources are done and uploaded each and every single day. What's something that you've got on? What's something that's got you thinking this week?
Yes. I did mention this to you on the phone the other day. I picked up a brand new book. I went to the city yesterday to go to a meeting at Parliament House or places to celebrate special religious education in this state, which is something that happens in most of our public schools, and went to my favourite bookstore in the city, which I love to do, what you might call a mindfulness moment, which you get in your busy schedule, and I got this book called Living Life in Crescendo, Your Most Important Work is Always Ahead of You by Stephen Covey and Cynthia Covey. And he's, of course, the writer of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teens and Highly Effective Children, etc., amongst other books. And I just want to read you quickly the chapter headings to whet your appetite.
Go for it.
So it says, life is a mission, not a career. That's chapter one. Number two, love to serve. Chapter three, people are more important than things. Chapter four, leadership is communicating worth and potential. Chapter five, work to expand your circle of influence. Chapter six, choose to live in crescendo, not diminuendo. Chapter seven, find your why. And then chapter eight is keep momentum going. Chapter nine, create meaningful memories. And chapter 10, detect your purpose.
I love that. I can already imagine what he said in each of those chapters based off the titles and the things I have listened to from Stephen Covey. And I think I might have to steal that or find it somewhere myself in the next little bit and read it, because he always has valuable information to say. And I think as Christians as well, there's many things that we can take from what he's written and find that in the Bible as well. It's really, really exciting.
Also, the idea that you can always live with your most important work in front of you is always something to contribute and do. And I like the second chapter, is the power of serving others. And I read some of that in the train coming back last night, and there's some powerful quotes in there. I think maybe down the track we'll do a podcast on this one. But
maybe maybe we need to have a bit of a book club at some point and go through some of the things that, that we have been reading. For me this week, there has been a lot on. I've been quite busy, but there was an Instagram post this morning from Adam Grant that I shared. And I think that it is very sage advice for such a time as this. And this is what it says. It says, being appreciated doesn't just make you feel good. It makes you feel, or helps you to get stronger. The evidence is receiving gratitude improves cardiovascular stress responses, boosting resilience and performance by turning threats into challenges. Being thanked fortifies our bodies along with our bonds. And I want to apply that to teamwork and to teams. I think about how very, very often leaders struggle to thank their people for various reasons. But being appreciated, whether it's in a business sense or in a relationship, actually doesn't just make you mentally stronger, it makes you physically stronger. And I find that really interesting when we think about our last few years and how disconnected our society has become in many ways. The very real evidence that shows that connection is actually essential, and thanking one another, a basic human thing, is essential for strengthening us and strengthening us physically as well. So, yeah.
You're spot on, and I've tried to make it a habit of mine to express as much gratitude and thankfulness to other people as I can. If I can't find something, I really want to at least say something. So I am working hard on developing that habit even more of showing gratitude and thankfulness to others. And as I say, if you want to feel appreciated and thanked, then start doing it to others, and it will come around in full circle eventually.
Full circle. And it does, I can tell you that much. This last week I showed appreciation for one of my team members, and they didn't want to accept the appreciation. It was rather funny. They kept on trying to deflect it elsewhere. And I said, no, you have been putting the effort in and I want to appreciate that. And it's because of you. But I just thought that's something that got me thinking this week that we can apply to our relationships. And speaking of that,
home and marriages and families as well.
Yes, home, marriages, family, all those things. And thinking of Rich, what we're about to speak about today is something that I think affects all of our relationships, particularly as we come up to Christmas. And I think our family, well, I know our family has a tradition about what we're going to be speaking about today, and that's mealtimes. And as I think back over my life, I can think of countless examples of mealtimes we have all shared together. And look, let's be honest, we weren't always perfect because we lived busy lives, and sometimes it was eat and sit in front of the TV and hope for the best. Yep. But I can think of countless mealtime opportunities, whether it's with us just as a family, whether it's with extended relatives, the whole Pasco clan, or whether it's with Adrian and or countless other people, where those mealtimes are moments that become memory events. And you've written most of the episode today because I've been busy doing other stuff, but you say here, and you can find this on your Facebook page, on Darren Pratt's Facebook page. He says, mealtimes are a sacred ritual that we need to reclaim, redefine, remake, and ritualize in our homes to reap the rewards that flow not only to our children, but to us personally. And I want to quote some research. I'm not sure that you quote here, but McCrindle found that less than 30% of Australian families were doing mealtimes with each other anymore. And so in that research from McCrindle, he really unpacks how families are losing out on an important opportunity to connect with one another.
And we're talking about connection and the power of connection. And mealtimes is one thing that I guess allows the family to stop, to come together, to tune out of the busy consumeristic lifestyle that they live in and consume some food slowly around a table. And in many homes, the dining tables become a dusty irrelevancy, a piece of furniture that you like to have, but no one actually sits around it anymore and uses it. So
it becomes a storage space.
Yes, or a workspace. I guess my challenge to families today is to clear off the table, set the table, and have a family meal together, a slow family meal. I was reading research from Lifeway that said that one of the things that defines a spiritual resilient household is that they have regular meals and invite people regularly for meals as well. So it's the sharing together around the table with family and friends that appears to be protective in so many ways, especially when it comes to our children.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think meals are perhaps one of the most essential relationship connection points. And I wonder if some of the troubles we're seeing in relationships today, and there's some new research that I saw this week that came out of a couple of different groups. One was a more conservative group and one was a more more progressive group. But they both said, one of them was public club, but they both say that in Australia, relationships are struggling at the moment in general. Our ability to connect with one another is at an all-time low. And people are simply losing all those points where they do connect. And I think that mealtime is a space that if we can reclaim, we can create moments where relationship and getting to know one another can truly happen. And, I mean, dating culture has changed if you have a look at today. And Simon Sinek speaks about this a fair bit on his podcast, in that dating culture has changed in such a way that people no longer have to be vulnerable with one another. And people no longer have to go out of their way to connect with each other over a meal. They just have to swipe left or right, and whatever happens, happens. Whereas back in the day, and I don't think it was that long ago, to date someone meant to have to cook and have to share and have to get to know one another intimately over a shared meal.
Yes. Your mother can tell about the first meal I cooked for her when we started dating. And it was canned tomato soup. That turns out she hates canned tomato soup. It was apricot pie. She's not a here nor there, but it's okay. Spearmint leaves, lollies, which I love and she doesn't like. And so the meal was a bit of a disaster, but the fact that I went to an effort to cook for her, or at least prepare a meal for her and do something, what mattered. And the secret is not so much in the menu. The secret is in the act of service of cooking, but also the rough and tumble that comes from a family of setting the table and doing the dishes and fighting and making up and running off and coming back and all those sorts of things that occur in the hustle and bustle. It's in the conversation and connection that occurs around that meal, which is something that is a lost art, as McCrindle research and Sinek were saying. So, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our family tradition, if I think back, the Pascoe family tradition is to have soup.
And Friday night
soup. And the whole family comes together in a big, messy, intergenerational family. We all sit around the table together, young and old. Although I think as the family got a bit bigger, we had to segregate some of the kids off to a table right next to the big table.
But look at Nanny and Pa's table. It's actually a board,
yes,
over the top of their smaller table to make it bigger so that all the family have a spot around that table.
I was trying to do some math just before and think about how many we could fit. I think we've had up to, like, I don't know, 16 or 17 adults around the table at different times.
Yes.
And it's one, we're not separating into the whole house. We're all coming together to have a meal around the table together because that's where we have something different, some conversation happen, some true going deep and getting to know one another. And this soup is homemade by Pa. The bread is homemade by Pa.
The best you'll find anywhere.
The jam is homemade by Pa. The cream, I think, is whipped by Nan. Yeah. I want to give Nan some credit. But it's always the same and it's consistent and it's a family favorite. And I couldn't give a number of how many Friday nights have been spent there growing with one another. But what for you does that meal communicate?
It for me, it communicates that despite the fact that there are differences in the family and you look at the Pascoe family, they're all very different in some ways. And it's a blended family, by the way, with three kids from one family and three from another. And so there's all those dynamics that came into step families and issues involved around that. So Nanny and Pa, I mean, Pa used to make this meal when I first met your mother. The very first meal was, I went to their house, was this. So it's always been that. And I remember some of your grandkids kicking up a stink one time when Grandma Nanny cooked a different meal to what you normally cook.
I think we had haystacks on a Friday night and we all said no.
Yes, yes, because it's got to be the homemade. And I think the fact that Pa spends all year picking the fruit often comes from the Pasco 100-year-old property, which Lisa and I now live on, and making the jams that will be shared at those Friday nights. So he's thinking all year about which jams he needs, what he needs to make, so that the jams are ready for when we do those Friday night meals. Mm. And then it's not just bread. It's bread's taking all day to make, with rising it and kneading it and putting his time into it to make the best bread anywhere. So it's a well-thought-out meal of service. And, yes, it brings memories. It brings anchor points for that family. It brings connection. And we can relax and enjoy that Friday evening meal around that table.
I think it also communicates, for me, a sense of peace in that there's a regularity to it that is comforting, that we can know that it's going to be there. And and I think that's something that some families might be struggling with today. And when I look at some of the stats, is that people aren't sure if their family is going to be there tomorrow. People aren't sure if there's going to be a space for them tomorrow. I speak to some people and the spaces that they come from are places where they don't feel like they belong and can truly be themselves. And I think that's something that family mealtimes really give, is a knowledge that I can come to this table and I can be me and I'm going to be loved and known and accepted.
Yes, an amount of grace is definitely part of the seasoning around that family meal of acceptance, love and understanding. And anything that's broken is repaired around that table as the family comes together. Now, I can't say we're all buddy-buddy pals, but we respect, we get along, we talk, we listen, we cry, we learn, we love, and that's part of being a family.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a completely different sort of relationship to any other as well. And we've got to remember that those sorts of relationships are something else, there's something unique about them. So as I think about this, why are mealtimes disappearing?
I think it's the busyness that life has thrown at us now. We live in not just a 9-to-5 work environment. It's often husband will work shifts, wife will work shifts, and the kids are busy at school. Electronics has definitely invaded the family space, with often families being separated into their own rooms online, but often not connected. Often we're parenting from a mobile phone rather than face-to-face. And, yeah, I think there's really been a undermining of the family mealtime by the various technologies and life circumstances that now is thrown at busy families.
Mm. Yeah, and I just think our world that we're in has demanded that people spend less time at home. We're in a space now where people are commuting far more than ever before. People are in the car far often, and mealtimes are just getting pushed out of the home.
Also, there's been the increase of fast food. It's easier to, and this is very American in some way. When I went to America, a lot of homes don't have kitchens anymore. Mm. It's all order in. And the Costco ready meal, the fast food, Taco Bell and others that are invading Australia now and going up every street corner, your KFCs, your McDonald's, your Subways. A lot of families are grabbing a bite to eat on the way home. Oh, I'll be right, I'll get a bite to eat on the way home. And often it's out of necessity because you're not getting home till late. And the family meal is being pushed to the edges. And, yeah, so is marriages, so is relationships, so are families.
Yeah, it kind of is what it is at this point. And I think we've got to turn the tide, in my view, to create family connection again, and also to create a space where children can grow. And I think one of the things that we're missing now is that children aren't able to learn from their parents as easily because they're just not having those conversations with their parents. And there's some studies from Columbia University who found that families that eat together at least four or five times a week are more likely to have children who do better at school. So it's simple. Is that when you have mealtimes, you do better. And it also says that they're less likely to get involved in at-risk activities and that those children will also more likely to adopt the values and traditions that the extended family hold dear. I'm just this week in the program I'm doing at Kingscliff is it's called Rebuilding the Family Altar. But the first question, which I got feedback today, great feedback today on it. But the first question was asking families to create a family mission statement.
Love that.
And by that, to go through what do we hold dear, what do we not hold dear, what do we want to be like as a family? And the person this morning said to me, it was far harder than I thought it was going to be. And we still haven't finished it. And I said, yeah, it's going to be a longer term activity. It's something that is a deeper work to identify the things that we hold to be important. And without getting around the table, I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading a book that, it's called Saying is Believing, and often you need to voice what you believe to actually believe it. Mm-hmm. And the power of testimony. And yeah, by Amanda Hans Drury, it's called Saying is Believing. And yeah, she says, until, especially as young people, we can testify to who we are, what we believe in. It doesn't really sink down into our internal well-being and sit there. We need to voice it sometimes. To actually understand what we're saying and what we're believing. And that's mealtimes helps that happen.
I mean, if we go to the Bible, right, the breaking of bread isn't just a communion thing. A breaking of bread is a symbol for eating together. And we often brush over this, but Jesus often ate together with people.
He was called a wine bibber and a glutton for he said he basically had parties and ate with everyone. I mean, Zacchaeus came down from the tree and said, let's go eat. And the famous miracles of which you twice understand of breaking the bread and giving it to everyone, he fed everyone before he fed them spiritually, he fed them physically. So, Jesus was accused of overdoing it when it came to mealtimes.
Well, we get the same example in John, which chapter it is now, all of a sudden, with Mary and Martha. And he's sitting there with his friends and they're about to have a meal together. And it's not, and if we see there in that account with Mary and Martha, it wasn't just the meal time, it was also the spiritual food as well was happening in this home. And I think that we can reclaim meal times and breaking bread together as a sacred ritual, as a space where we create God moments for Definitely. Our kids every day, or at least a few times a week, where the kids know that they can just be themselves and be honest with who they are and who they are in God's eyes and who they are in your eyes at the table. And in that space, I think it's going to not only reap rewards for kids, but it's also going to reap rewards for all the people that are sitting at the table. And if I think about our tables, Michaela's family table and my family table, we could always bring any sort of discussion to that space, and that was okay. And we could have any kind of discussion, and inevitably the food would long be done and we'd still be sitting there chatting. And I think that's an important thing to be able to do, because what it does is it reinforces that this is a space that you can work out who you are.
Yeah. And often after mealtime, if you've got the time, there's some really snazzy family board games and games. And I know that the Thompsons love those too. And, yes, extend the mealtime and the connection time. And we'd do another probably podcast on the power of board games as far as building connection goes. But, yes, you can try and push the time out by doing a board game as well. But just, I know our time's running out fast, and we thought we wouldn't enough to talk about today, but yes, today we've got plenty. But just a couple of interesting little research snippets. Catherine Snow from Harvard discovered that mealtime conversations teach children more vocabulary than when parents read to them. Now, wow. I love the idea of reading, and reading is powerful, but it says mealtimes trumps that. and also a Reader's Digest of more than 2,000 parents compared academic achievement with family characteristics. Surprisingly, eating meals together was a stronger predictor of academic success than whether the children lived with one or two parents.
Mm.
Wow. That, again, is pretty powerful stuff there. And I guess the one that to close out today with as well and is Brunello Cicinelli. Now, he's an Italian fashion designer. So Italians love food. In fact, one of my favourite restaurants is Italian restaurants with pasta and pizza and all those things thrown in. Well, he's a fashion designer. He believes that mealtimes matter in his factories. In fact, he makes lunchtimes, and I get this, an hour and a half long in his factories for his workers.
Wow.
Staff sit down at long, proper tables to eat and talk. Cicinelli believes that a proper lunch is a sacred ritual and one that ups the creativity of his workers and fosters a familial cohesion in the office and on the factory floor. Powerful. If you want to bring cohesion and creativity and connection, get a sacred ritual happening around family meals. Now, one of the things that we try and do, I guess, is Pa's sacred dish is his soup and homemade bread and jams. For me, it's always been making a spinach and ricotta lasagna. At most big family events, I pull one of those together, or even someone I'm feeling stressed during the week. For me, it's making lasagna that helps me to de-stress. Just making the meal is a de-stressing moment for me, knowing that I'm preparing it and enjoying the cooking. I often play some good music while I'm doing that. But also the idea that I'm doing it for the family to serve, I think, is de-stressing as well. So I'll challenge you to try and find the time to come up with a signature dish that your family loves that you can cook. That's your contribution to your family, and it's a labour of love that helps build those strings of connection and ties and family.
Yeah. So I think it's time for us to propose that we all try to reclaim our family dinner table. If it's become a working from home station, move that to another room and make the dinner table, even if it's only 30 minutes, even if that's all you can give, but make some time to sit there and to be together with your family. And the kids are going to whinge, you're going to feel stressed about it, but the rewards are going to be clear, and very soon your family will be able to connect to one another in a much deeper way. And I think that when we get our hands into the kitchen with our kids and with each other, it creates so many other moments in our family that is essential. In fact, for many things in our home, they start in the kitchen. They start in the dining room, and that is really the center of our homes. And we need to make sure that we reclaim those spaces for what they are.
Yes, thanks, Sam. You probably heard the school bell there, so
that's okay. I'll edit it out.
But what you say is so important. And remember that the secret's not in the food. The secret's in the connections built around that family table. My other challenge is to try and this is a big one to dads as well, is the electronic gadgets, ban them at the table. In the middle, or put them on side, or put them onto silent, but ban the technology so that you can create meaningful moments around the table. If you have to buy the food in, do it to create that, but build connection around the table and your family and yourself and your marriage will reap the rewards.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I think it's time to hop off the soapbox and get back to work. And I want to thank you for carving out the time this week so that we could get together. And I look forward to catching up next time on the soapbox.
Awesome holiday meal time to see you, Andrew.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks. All right. Bye-bye.